This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Joseph Zupan. He is the new executive director of Amigos Bravos. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. I'm so glad to be here, and please call me Joe.
Joe it is. Now, Amigos Bravos is an organization that has been diligently looking out for the health of New Mexico's water for a couple of decades.
Years.
Yeah, almost 3 decades. And now you have stepped in to this position. Tell us about how you found out about Amigos Bravos and about your own background.
Oh, gosh. Well, okay. So my background, I grew up in southern Colorado, and I was a Boy Scout and did all that, so I was always interested in getting up into the mountains and enjoying the natural environment. Got an engineering degree in Colorado, and for the past 30 years, I've been working in Austin, Texas as an environmental engineer. But I was ready to get back to my Rocky Mountain roots, so I decided to come to Taos, New Mexico, which is lovely, with my family. And it came to my attention about the opening at Amigos Bravos. After 28 years, my predecessors, Brian Shields and Sonny Morris, were stepping down to enjoy their own retirement. And I still wanted to have something important to do. And the more I read about Amigos Bravos, the more impressed I was with the kind of work they'd been doing for, as you say, 3 decades. And the footprint they've had in helping to shape New Mexico water policy and building resilience into not only the watersheds, but the communities that need to use the water in New Mexico. Small but mighty is how I'd characterize Amigos Bravos. Some of my friends in Austin said, "What is Amigos Bravos, brave friends? What is that?" And I said, "I think it might translate even better to fierce friends of the Rio Grande."
Yeah, fierce friends. I mean, bravo is a funny word in Spanish. It can mean fierce, angry, brave, all of those things.
Yes. We try not to be angry unless we absolutely have to, but we're definitely fierce.
So it's a real kind of David and Goliath situation that you guys are in a lot. And I was really struck by looking over the work that you have done in the past at Amigos Bravos. There is a real case to be made that New Mexico would be a very, very different state indeed if this organization had not existed.
I quite agree with you, Mary Charlotte. Its roots 28 years ago was concern in the local Taos community about the Molycorp mine up at Cuesta and the impacts that was having on the Red River and subsequently the Rio Grande. So Brian and Sonny got the organization going to address that. And the mission really grew to protect all the waters of New Mexico. And in the process of doing that, it required a lot of grassroots activism to kind of counteract big corporate interests or perhaps government entities that maybe weren't headed quite the right direction. So again, Amigos Bravos, we'll take them all on. And we try to do coalition building and education first and foremost. But one of our planks is also to hold polluters accountable, and we've certainly done that.
Who are some of the polluters? What have they been polluting or trying to pollute? And how has Amigos Bravos stepped in? Give us some examples.
Well, notably, a really interesting campaign for us has been our work with the Coalition for Clean Water up at Los Alamos National Laboratories. Los Alamos is such an interesting place. It's such an important place in the life of, American society for the past 60 years. I was struck my first visit there. It's like, what was the U.S. government thinking in the 1940s when they decided this is the perfect place to go test how radioactive materials might blow things up? Very, very interesting.
Well, it's so remote, or was at the time.
Yeah, I think, and that was probably the point. They were very worried about espionage during World War II, and so they wanted a place where you were kind of tucked away from everything. But needless to say, the practices in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s were not what we would call best practices today. And a lot of historical contamination, was a result. and chemicals and PCBs and radionuclides washing down the arroyos into the Rio Grande, which is, of course, Santa Fe's drinking water supply, and really kind of upstream from much of New Mexico. So that was really an important effort for us. And I guess for me, what was kind of especially remarkable was this coalition we entered into with some partners. One of our coalition partners is the Tewa Women United. So it's a Pueblo-based organization that feels like they were impacted by all of the activities at Los Alamos.
And they're an incredible group.
They are an incredible group. Miriam Naranjo is honestly one of the most impressive human beings I've met. She's kind of in a leadership role at Tewa Women United. She is the one that is responsible for all these meetings that we have with Los Alamos professional and scientific staff. She'll open the meetings with a prayer that says, let us consider the land and the healing of the land. You know, it's like our role at Amigos Bravos is we come with technical resources and the ability to really push through with political and legal remedies, but she reminds me that it's really about healing the land and respecting the land. And as an engineer, that's a concept I'm really trying to embrace because it feels right.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, what the work is all about. And ultimately, that's what environmental science is all about at this point in history, where there is so much man-made, human-made disruption that healing and restoration, whether you call it healing from a prayer perspective or healing from a scientific perspective, it's the same thing.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You know, as an engineer, I have to look at our roots. You know, for most of the last 100 years, what engineers were doing was trying to reform the natural environment to meet our whims and our needs. And, you know, certainly a lot of that has been productive and useful for society, but a lot of it has been very short-sighted in terms of the long-term environmental impacts that it might have and keeping a resilience in our relationship with the environment.
It's funny because it's been such a short time, really, historically, that we have come to see that we can actually ruin the world around us. We didn't have the power to do so before that. We had the power to commit acts of war that were ruinous. And I suppose they, in Roman times, they salted the fields of their enemies and so on. But now it's not about war as a destructive force. It's actually what we think of as our well-being, our comforts, and our ability to get around and stay warm and all of those things that are in themselves destructive forces.
Yeah, absolutely. Honestly, the biggest challenge in front of us, and we at Amigos Bravos recognize it, is global climate change. New Mexico is kind of ground zero for some of the bad effects that are coming from climate change. Honestly, some of the predictions and studies suggest that our spring snowpack and runoff will be less than 25% by the year 2050.
Oh my goodness.
So a 25% reduction in the water in an arid state like New Mexico is something that is certainly compelling and means that we have to do things that build resilience and you know, do what we can for the watershed. One of our really important projects, we think, right now is the so-called wetland gems up in the high country of the Carson and Santa Fe National Forests. And what these are high country wetlands that kind of serve as a sponge that soak up that spring melt and runoff and then slowly release it throughout the season. And that's really important for a, you know, more consistent water supply. Now, when those wetlands are degraded by cattle grazing, lumber, you know, too many roads and ATVs kind of ruining the way the impact that the wetlands can work. What that means is you'll get a big flush in the spring and then dry the rest of the year. So resilience is the key word. We have to keep a resilient watershed, given that we're looking at potentially a 25% reduction in our snowpack and our runoff.
So how do you actually, I mean, what can people do to build in resilience given such drastic changes in the water that's available naturally?
Well, right now we think there's a really big opportunity. We're working with some coalition partners during the planning process for both the Carson National Forest and the Santa Fe National Forest. Now, this is a process that only comes around every 25 or 30 years, and it's where the Forest Service takes a fresh look at how the forest is being used and how to manage it responsibly. And we're just saying that there are some things that can be done right now at this point, including the preservation of these wetland gems, so that the national forests maintain some resiliency and an ability to keep healthy watersheds.
So do you build barriers that make the water run down more slowly, that
kind
of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. We do on-the-ground work with volunteers largely, putting up cattle fences, you know, to kind of keep them out of the wetland gems areas. If they trample those wetlands, then they tend to degrade and not hold the water. Same thing, you know, we want the Forest Service to be very aware of where both authorized and unauthorized vehicle use is occurring. You know, roads through a high country wetland are very detrimental.
Yeah.
It just washes down sediment and degrades the function of the wetland.
There are other things that Amigos Bravos has been involved in, and one of them was the Valle Vidal. Tell us about that.
Yeah, the Valle Vidal is an amazing area. Speaking of a high country gem, it's a large valley kind of north of Taos, between Taos and Raton. And it was being considered for oil and gas leases and development. And Amigos Bravos, I think, really took the lead. It was before my time. But assembling a coalition of people that said, that's not the right place for oil and gas development. And it was a successful campaign. And right now there is no oil and gas development in the Valle Vidal. It's funny because anecdotally what I've heard is you can almost go up to the borders of it and there's oil and gas development like crazy. But right there at the confines of the Valle Vidal, we were able to hold off oil and gas development.
There's other places also in around the state that are protected from development. And there's a lot of different kinds of development. There's oil and gas development. There's also RV development.
Yeah. Yeah.
Recreational vehicles.
Yeah. I'm a fan of people getting out into nature and enjoying it because I think that's where you develop an appreciation for its beauty and its fragility and its worth. But, you know, we are at risk sometimes of loving it to death. You don't want unlimited access to every single part of the most fragile ecosystems. There's been a lot of controversial talk about wilderness designations, such as the Pecos wilderness designation. And that worries a lot of people, and I can understand why in terms of historical uses of cattle grazing and the acequia associations, et cetera. But again, the idea of protecting watershed resilience is so key as our population keeps putting more burdens on our watersheds and as climate change, you know, reduces our ability to have as much water as we even have now.
It's funny because this is something that in every sector you can find examples of it. We did a show not long ago on a film called Sonic Sea, which is about all the noise that we're putting into the ocean through shipping and sonar and oil and gas development and all of those things, and including cruise ships. And cruise ships are a way that people can open their hearts to seeing the whales and the dolphins, but the sound of the cruise ships is terrible for the whales and the dolphins. And those are the things that we really have to think more deeply about as citizens.
Yeah, unintended consequences, things that we kind of take for granted, aren't a natural part of the natural world oftentimes. And again, there just gets to be more and more of us, and our footprint on the planet is ever larger. So that means we have to be very smart about where we place those footprints.
So one of the ways that you work, and you started to talk about this a little bit, is coalition building among sometimes perhaps unlikely allies. What does this look like?
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting because it's easy to pigeonhole people in groups and say, well, they think this or those people think that. But if you really think it through and have some open dialogue, you can find that there's seriously some common ground. For example, one of our partners for Watershed Health is Trout Unlimited. So, you know, these are men and women that enjoy going out and fishing the rivers. That doesn't quite sound like watershed protection, but in fact, they care deeply about the health of the watersheds.
Well, and they care deeply that trout populations are healthy.
Correct. So really, the key is to just kind of listen to people and listen to what they think. A lot of the farmers up in the high country around the Mora Valley are very suspicious of, you know, environmental people, you know, coming in and trying to tell us our business. But when you kind of reframe this, the terms of the debate to say, no, we want to keep moisture up here for longer in a more sustainable way, they get that. It's like, yeah, we don't want it to all just run off in a month and then have no water for the rest of the year. That would be bad. So we hear what you're saying.
Yeah. You are in an interesting position as an organization, and we're talking to Joseph Zupan, who is the new executive director of Amigos Bravos. You're in an interesting position in the sense that you have to both find ways to really work closely with government agencies, a lot of different agencies, local, county, state, federal. You also have to, when necessary, fight them.
Yes.
So you're in that position of having to be both, as we were talking about, your name says, both friendly and ferocious.
Yeah, that's true. We do have, there are lots of caring people in all levels of government that are trying to do the right thing, but different administrations come in with different policies. And, you know, it's, again, a duty we've taken up to say, we really need to advocate for the health of watersheds. An example was a couple of weeks ago, we filed a suit against the Bureau of Land Management because of opening up leases for oil and gas development in the Santa Fe National Forest. Our point is, this hasn't been thought through, and there may be better places for oil and gas development than in the Santa Fe National Forest. And so we filed suit. That's not to say there aren't people within the BLM that are doing good and appropriate things, but you know, we have to tackle these policy issues where we find them. Same with New Mexico state government. There's a lot of really hardworking people in the NMED and other agencies, again, trying to do the right thing every day for the environment, but different administrations have different policies, and so when it's appropriate, we'll work with them, and when it's appropriate, we'll challenge them.
Talk about the Clean Water Act. What is it, and what has it meant to New Mexico? The Clean Water Act has also undergone a lot of challenges and has needed a lot of, I guess you would say, citizen support.
Yeah, for sure. The Clean Water Act is honestly one of the most important pieces of environmental legislation in the country. People that are as old as I am can kind of maybe remember the old days in the 60s when rivers were catching fire. And
In Cleveland.
Cleveland, exactly. And people kind of looked up and said, maybe that's not quite right. And of all things, Richard Nixon, the Nixon administration, is who founded the Environmental Protection Agency in response to some of these concerns. But the Clean Water Act was exactly that. It was designed initially to provide a clean water supply to communities and to protect our rivers and lakes and watersheds. And it's undergone many, many, many revisions through the years. And a lot of people are kind of afraid of it. Again, water users are saying, well, that's the government coming in and telling us exactly how to run our business. But
well, yeah, it's exactly that.
Yeah.
Because so many companies have taken the tack, we don't care.
Yeah, and I think that's maybe less prevalent now than it was certainly in those earlier decades. I think there's a lot of responsible businesses that are trying to do the right thing. But the Clean Water Act and all of its revisions kind of provide a blueprint. You know, what does it look like if you want to do the right thing? It looks like this. Honestly, it was a Clean Water Act provision that we took on Los Alamos Laboratories in terms of stormwater runoff, and we were successful in implementing a multi-sector stormwater permit for all of Los Alamos County, and that was so important to our work there. You know, it was a regulatory hammer, if you will, but also a blueprint and a map for where we needed to be.
So talk more about the Clean Water Act as it applies to New Mexico. Like, so there's this act that passes Congress in the 1970s. What does it say that affects us here about how people have to go about their business?
Yeah, I mean, a large part of it is monitoring certain water quality parameters, so-called, in our rivers and lakes. There's certain things that you don't want to be in a healthy watershed or in water people are drinking and using. And it basically provides ways to protect that and to keep those water quality parameters within bounds of where they ought to be for a healthy watershed.
Meaning what specifically?
Oh, you know, dissolved metals like zinc, aluminum, selenium. Up in Taos County with all the volcanic rock, we have a problem sometimes with uranium, naturally occurring uranium. Nobody did anything. It's just in the water. One interesting water quality parameter that people don't always think of is temperature. For a fossil fuel power plant, you're taking cooling water out of the river and cooling your equipment, and then you're putting it in back much warmer, back into the river. Well, that's a problem for the ecological health of the river. It can't be too warm, or a lot of the native species won't be able to thrive or survive.
When we talk about water quality of that kind, there's two things you can do. One, respond to problems that exist, and the other is prevent problems before they happen. Talk about what Amigos Bravos does on both ends of that.
Yeah, so one example of just water quality monitoring, we have a volunteer group up in Taos County doing water quality sampling in the Rio Fernando, and that includes high school students. Our partner there, Eric Patterson, is a high school chemistry teacher, and he's rallied all these students to go out and take water quality samples.
Which is so great for them to learn about their Absolutely. Home environment.
Yeah, we're creating a new environmental awareness in the next generation, which is, you know, wonderful. Up there, one of the problems is so-called E. coli contamination. Of course, all of the homeowners are pointing at the people that run cattle saying the E. coli is coming from them, and all the cattlemen are pointing to the homeowners saying it's your septic tanks. So part of our issue is trying to figure out exactly where it's coming from and pinpoint it and try to do something about it. If it's from the cattle, we'll take this approach. If it's from maybe leaking septic tanks or underperforming septic tanks, we can take this other approach.
Did you figure it out?
It's in process.
Ah.
In terms of preventing it, you know, that's probably a lot of people in New Mexico are familiar with that Gold King spill in the Animas River that flows into the San Juan that happened up in Colorado and then impacted the watershed all the way last year, all the way down through Farmington. The river was running this sickly yellow. And, you know, that's an example of a historical problem, an old mine with acidic water that kind of came out all in one big flush during a remediation effort by EPA contractors, I believe.
Yeah, they were supposed to protect us from that kind of thing, and it's the opposite is what happened.
They were. I kind of have a little bit of a feeling that, you know, I guess New Mexico is filing suit against the EPA for that. To me, that smacks just a tad of suing the fire department for the way they were trying to put out the fire after someone else started it. But certainly, you know, some of these old historical contamination situations are complex and not easy to solve. And that's why kind of getting out in front of it and, you know, future industrial activities or certainly extractive industries like mining need to be paying a lot of attention to how they're using water and how they're returning it back into the watershed.
One of the things that we have to look at in New Mexico when we look at the big picture is a system which rewards economic growth and population growth on the one hand, but on the other hand, we have limited and actually ever shrinking water supplies. So that kind of growth is not sustainable in the long run. How do you look at that, and what do you do to respond to that whole kind of big question?
Well, I'm delighted you asked that question, Mary Charlotte, because one of our projects we're working on now is the so-called Water Energy Nexus Report. And we think it's an important body of work that explains how various energy supplies and sources actually use a lot of water. Earlier in our conversation, I'd mentioned that we're afraid that climate change may decrease our water supply by about 25% within the next 30 or so years. Just so happens that fossil fuel industries use about 25% of New Mexico's water. So if we completely stopped water use in fossil fuel industries, that would have the potential of at least keeping us even.
Right.
It's a very interesting mirroring situation.
And there is this whole question of what on earth are we doing continuing to develop fossil fuels in the first place? I mean, it is a kind of form of insanity when we look at the potential destruction of climate change from burning those fossil fuels. It's so much greater, the destruction is so much greater than any potential short-term profit or gain.
No, you're absolutely right. We should be weaning ourselves away from fossil fuels as fast and furiously as we can, especially in a sunny southwestern state like New Mexico, where solar energy is such a big potential for us. I work with a group in Taos called Renewable Taos, and they've got some very ambitious plans to make Taos self-sufficient with renewables within really the next decade or two. And I think the whole country should be on a crash program like that just to kind of ward off the very worst of global climate change from increasing concentrations of carbon dioxide in the air.
So you are new at Amigos Bravos. Amigos Bravos is an organization based in Taos, but that really works all over the state of New Mexico. And over the years, we've had people from Amigos Bravos here talking about the different monitoring projects that you guys are doing and finding traces of all kinds of drugs that people take and chemicals in the water and stuff like that, and talking about the parts of New Mexico that have been protected with one kind of wilderness or other designation that protects them from being spoiled. So much is going on. What is your hope? What do you think are the next phases, what the next projects that you will be overseeing as director of this organization in the years to come?
Well, it's certainly our hope to get a consideration of the nexus of water and energy into the hands of our state legislature. I think that's something that they will want to pay a lot of attention to once they understand the ramifications that for every, volt of energy that we export as a state, we're also, in essence, exporting some of our water to create that volt.
Yeah, I mean, water, to produce energy mostly takes water. I guess photovoltaics would be an example of a kind of energy production that doesn't use water.
Yeah.
And also, moving water requires energy.
It does.
So it cuts both ways.
It absolutely does cut both ways. And, kudos to the oil and gas industry. They did figure out some new technologies, the fracking, that helped them do their business. But we have huge concerns about that because it takes so much water to do the fracking. So it's just, again, an example of a kind of energy source that we need to move away from post-haste. I drove here today in a Jeep that burns gasoline, so I don't want to be a hypocrite about it, but we've got to move fast to get away from these fossil fuels.
So that's one thing that Amigos Bravos is working on, is the water energy nexus. What else are you looking at?
Well, a lot of what we want to do in the state relates to policy development. We're working on the dairy rule, which is, how dairies use and manage water and wastewater, mining reform, the extractive industries and the way they use water. More awareness, too. We were talking about educating the kids that are helping us with our water sampling. The next generation has got a much bigger environmental awareness of even us boomers, and I love that. You know, the next generation of people that are coming up are not going to stand for environmental degradation and social injustice. They're just not having it. And the savvy employers, at least, are figuring this out. It's like, well, okay, we're a business, in business to make money, but we need to hire these young folks, and we'd better make sure that our values and our ways of doing business align with what they think they should be.
Amigos Bravos has been around for 28 years, and one of the things that you do every year is hold a raffle, and in order to help support the organization. And it's amazing how much you do on, you know, a relatively small budget.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about this raffle. It's called Annual Raffle for the Rio.
Yeah, Annual Raffle for the Rio. It's a lot of fun. This year, the drawing's on June 22nd, and it's a winner's choice of three prizes. It's an acre of land up near Taos Mountain, or a cash prize of $3,000, or new this year, an all-inclusive vacation package for two, including airfare to Hamanami, which is a Belize resort, which sounds lovely, and I've seen the pictures. Man, I'd like to go. We also have a raffle party in Taos on Saturday the 18th at Taos Mesa Brewing Company. So any of your Santa Fe listeners that find themselves up in our neck of the woods, you're certainly invited to come by. Lots of details on our website.
Excellent. And so people can go to amigosbravos.org to find out more about that, find out about the party, maybe get a raffle ticket if they feel like it. How can people participate if they want to support the organization, perhaps as volunteers or in other ways?
Yeah, I mean, if raffles aren't your bag, you know, just becoming a member and supporter and a volunteer is something that we're always happy to have. We have lots of volunteer efforts going on around the state. One of the things that we're doing down around Albuquerque is the new Valle de Oro Wildlife Refuge. And, you know, once again, it's kind of a lot of kids and students learning how to do sampling and kind of watching this plot of land that used to be an old dairy become a national wildlife refuge. So we have lots of projects and things that people can do. We're going to do a really fun Wetland Gyms restoration in August up above Red River. So if people want to come out, it's going to be going out, doing a little bit of work up in the mountains, camping out, having a blast. Adult beverages could potentially be involved. So, you know, contact us if you just want to volunteer and find out more about what we're about.
Joseph Zupan is Executive Director of Amigos Bravos. They are on the web at amigosbravos.org, and we will link to that on our website. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thanks for having me, Mary Charlotte. It's been my pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.